How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in and rolling on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And joining me now is award-winning sports anchor from ABC 24, also the host of The 24th Floor at ABC 24. That's Avery Braxton on X at Brax underscore Avery. Avery, what's happening, man? Good to talk with you.
What's happening, man? I hope you're staying cool out here. They're talking about 100-plus degree index, heat indexes and all that kind of stuff. I hope you're staying cool.
I'm not. I'm telling you right now, I'm not. I got back from San Diego last week. It was 70 out there. Now, the sun beats a little harder, but it's a substantial amount more hot, just unbearably hot when you get to Memphis. You get off a plane, and you get hit by that that wall of humidity.
For sure.
All right. Now, I'll be joining the 24th floor tomorrow. How about that? That should be fun, and we'll probably be talking about the same thing we're going to talk about right now, and that's the violations for academic integrity that the NCAA handed out to the University of Memphis today. From what they found, it looks like $550 in payments to facilitate quizzes, homework, tests, and good scores for an already graduated student in Malcolm Dandridge. What has happened here is the academic advisor, Leslie Brooks, has gotten a 10-year show cause. It looks like 2 years of probation, two more years of probation, a $30,000 fine, plus 1% of the combined men's basketball and softball budgets. But I think the good news here, no penalty for Penny Hardaway. Is this almost the definition of a slap on the wrist for the University of Memphis basketball program?
I would say it's a bit of a slap on the wrist, partially because we know the athletic program kind of facilitated and kind of voluntarily gave up some stuff here and reported those things to the NCAA. So when they're already on a probationary period, it's kind of like, hey, man, we can't mess around with this kind of stuff. So I would say it is a bit of a slap on the wrist. And, I mean, I think if you're a Tigers fan of any kind, you're probably just glad that, you know, Penny Hardaway is not necessarily named or, you know, sure, directly involved in this one. So looks like they definitely avoid the worst of it. Still, it is kind of disappointing. And these are not anything that's new, right? We're talking
right
about stuff that happened in, you know, the 23-24 basketball season. So I wouldn't say all is well that ends well, but at least it's done and you know what it is.
Yeah, not all is well that ends well. It's insane to me because it feels unbelievably avoidable. Malcolm Dandridge was a graduate student already. He had his degree, and the fact that we had to look at a way, if you're the University of Memphis and that academic advisor, Leslie Brooks, find a way to help him sort of cheat through classes when he didn't even necessarily need to be taking them. If the only reason he was taking them at that point is to make sure he stayed eligible to play basketball. It just feels avoidable. Also, $550 worth of payments is just not all that much. Now, I know one of the softball players ended up backing out because she felt like she wasn't paid enough, but $550 worth of payments to facilitate all this is not, let's just be honest about it, Avery, not an overly big number.
Correct. And, I mean, ultimately, we still think of these athletes as student athletes, right? They are still going to school. And so,
we try to keep that up. We try to keep that up.
We try to keep, you know, that facade up. But the academic integrity, I think, is certainly something that's important to the institutions themselves, at least for the most part. And so, yeah, it is kind of – I thought what was bothersome to me, or what I thought was kind of goofy about the whole thing, is, like, one of the classes is, like, intro to theater. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It wasn't like we're talking about calculus here. So
right.
I thought the whole thing just kind of seems – disappointing, kind of goofy, but again, I'm kind of with you on that one. $550 or so, and it wasn't that the students felt terrible about it. It was just kind of like, hey, y'all might give me enough money to be doing classwork for Malcolm Dandridge, it seems like.
Yeah, and shout out to my guy Hitman for pointing this out, but he made the point of how avoidable this was. Jamie Rosser was one of the former assistants that was involved in these sort of academic misconduct violations and why it was investigated. He was accused knowingly of arranging the receipt of fraudulent academic credit for a prospective student-athlete, providing false or misleading information during his interviews, and failure to cooperate with the institution and enforcement staff's investigation when he was at SEMO. And that caused a postseason ban for SEMO prior to him being hired at Memphis. So I think his point is well taken as well. Don't do that in the future. Don't hire someone who has a history of this, because it ultimately could leak over into your program.
Right, and I think as we've talked to Dr. Ed Scott, we gotta remember these are not stuff that was necessarily happening under his watch.
Right,
right. And he's just been in Memphis for a year now, so I'm sure he's cleaning up a lot of those things. But yeah, 100% avoidable. And it's kind of like when you see some of these cops, right, law enforcement officers who kind of got a list of places they've gotten violations for. It's like, hey, maybe you don't hire that guy.
Right.
They've already given other programs postseason bans. I'm not saying people are not redeemable and don't learn their lessons, but it's clear that some people take a little bit longer to learn, and it's regrettable when they have to learn that lesson and it causes you a couple of wins and postseasons and things of that nature.
Do you think it's all cleaned up now that Ed Scott took over? I mean, let me just ask you that question. Do you think like these types of things are now in the past? Because that's the question I have. Penny Hardaway has run this program for the past 6-7 years at this point, and you've had multiple things pop up like this. Now, I know Ed Scott came in, Tim Duncan came in. They tried to, like, get their hands on this program, make sure things like this were cleaned up. But does it feel like, from where you're sitting, your estimation, that these types of things are going to be avoided in the future?
To my knowledge, nothing has come up under Dr. Ed Scott's watch of anything academic integrity-wise or violations or anything like that. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I think he's doing anything that is not above board and exactly what he should be doing as the, you know, athletic director over at Memphis. I've met, you know, obviously Dr. Ed Scott and Tim Duncan and Terrence Lawley and all those guys. And I think they've got the academics and the athletic program over there at Memphis trending in the right direction. And at the end of the day, like, all you can do and what the university did was, you know, hey, we saw this is what happened. Here's how we're trying to correct it. Here's how we're trying to work with the NCAA. And I mean, if you look at the headline of what the University of Memphis sent out, it's like, hey, we came to an agreement, kind of a settlement on what should happen in terms of violations. So that kind of shows, you know, it's not just the NCAA, quote unquote, giving the slap on the wrist or coming down on Memphis. It's like, hey, we're working together to, you know, appropriately get these things right.
Yeah. Now, 3 wins were vacated. I saw that. Wichita State, Temple, and Tulane. The softball program does not have to vacate wins because they didn't win in the period where this was happening. But I something tells me we're not going to miss that Wichita State, Temple, and Tulane win from 2024.
Well, one thing I think we can say was that season kind of tended to not go the way Memphis wanted it to anyway. If those 3 wins mean we also had to vacate a championship, then that's a different conversation.
Sure.
Right, but that season was already one that was pretty regrettable and forgettable if you're a Tigers basketball fan.
Now, I know this was from 2024, but it does sort of add on top of what has been, let's be honest. I know there's ways to get around it because Penny pivoted and he found a bunch of different talent on the open market and the transfer portal, but it does add on top to what has been a pretty rough offseason for that program, no?
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that, again, it's just regrettable. I mean, it's something that, again, like we talked about before, is avoidable. And when you do have to come in kind of year after year and, you know, get new talent through the transfer pool and all those things, I'm not saying every athlete's going to look at it that way, but it is kind of a stain on your program when you're seeing stuff like that. And you're hoping most of your student-athletes, if not all of your student-athletes, are doing exactly what they're supposed to do. But for Penny Hardaway, like, I think it's one of those things where it's like, I doubt Penny really knew what was happening until it gets directly brought to him, right? He's not telling, you know, his assistant coaches or his academic advisors to, you know, set up a way for Malcolm Dandridge to cheat. You know what I'm saying? It's like, hey, make sure they get their classwork done, make sure they go to class,
right,
and I can worry about the X and O's and winning us a championship. So if I'm Penny, I'm annoyed, And I think you hate to lose a little bit of money, even if it is a combined 1% of your budget, but you just don't want your name in the headlines for stuff like this.
Yep, for sure. All right, now let's get on to the Grizzlies. Let's get on to some a little more positive note. Summer League has been rolling along.
Grizzlies haven't been. They're 1-2, man.
Listen. It's Summer League. You get to see the guys play. I think it's positive in general. Seeing rookies, seeing second-year guys step into their own, whether it be Cam Spencer, Jalen Wells, and otherwise, G.G. Jackson. What have you thought? What are the things that have stuck out to you from their Summer League time, whether it was Utah or in Vegas now?
I think what's sticking out to me is Jermaine Mashak is definitely going to be the real deal. I think we might have potentially found another little diamond in the rough here. Maybe a la Jalen Wells, because I don't necessarily think he's going to have the same impact. But for him to come in and be scoring the way that he has, for him not to have been a notable three-point shooter during his time at Tennessee, I think his defense is as advertised thus far in terms of his ability to stay in front of people, guard 94 feet, harass, be annoying, kind of like in the Scottie Pippen vein of playing defense. But his ability offensively has kind of been a little bit surprising. Hit two threes in back-to-back games, and he's shooting them efficiently, right? He's
right.
Went 2-for-3, I think, both times, or 2-for-4, something like that, 3-for-4. And that has to be it has to make you feel good if you're part of that Grizzlies coaching staff, because it just kind of feels like that might be a guy that you potentially hit on. I think I was pleasantly surprised by, G.G. Jackson as well, just in terms of his passing. More than anything else, I mean, he had 6 assists last night. You could tell he's looking for teammates, and, he is typically going to be a score-first kind of guy looking for his bucket. But 6 assists is certainly something that is encouraging if you're watching his play, although, he's had kind of an up and down. It doesn't really feel like that defense is taking a huge step forward, but, that's something you have to continue to work on. And if he wants to get on the floor – when it really counts, right, during the regular season, that's going to be something that's really got to step up.
Yeah, now Jermaine Mashak, you brought him up, and last night you looked at his stat line, 15 points, 6 for 10 from the field, 2 for 3 from 3, 4 assists, 4 steals, 1 block, plus 17 in 23 minutes, even though they lost the game. I'm looking at his outlook with this team going forward, and I'm curious how they're going to play this, because it seems like they may have an open two-way, but also they have open roster spots. How do you expect the Grizzlies to go about sort of retaining and keeping Jermaine Mashak in the fold?
I think it's got to be the two-way spot. I would be surprised if, Kleiman really decides to go to the roster spot option.
Right. He was the last pick in the draft.
I think you let Jermaine Mashak cook in the G League. You give him some run up with the bigger roster when there's an opportunity. And I really think you just kind of try to hone in a little bit on his offensive game. I think defensively he's going to be fine. I think that's obviously what you drafted him for. But if you want to get on the floor, I mean, I think we saw with the Oklahoma City Thunder, they got a whole bunch of guys who can shoot the three ball well, at a decent clip, and they can guard people. And he's definitely got one side of that down pat. And I think they're just going to kind of let him cook down there in the G League for a little while. And if he surprises some folks, if he's really just out down there and dominating, then you can bring him up. But I think we kind of got the blueprint for what Zach Kleiman likes to do and what the Grizzlies like to do with that G League system, kind of a farm system, honestly, where, you see what they do down there in the G League on a two-way, and then potentially you bring them up, and they're grateful to take a, two-year, $8 billion deal, and, you're cooking in terms of, what you're avoiding the second apron and all those kind of things.
All right, now, going into next year, I'm going to give you an open-ended question about this team. Desmond Bane no longer on this team, so seemingly you took a step back. You have to see what Cedric Coward brings you. Zach Edey's going to be out to start the year. We'll see if Jaren Jackson Jr. can make it back for the start of the year. He's got his injury going on right now. What to you is next season about for the Memphis Grizzlies? Because certainly when you look at the top of the West and the movers and shakers, the Denver Nuggets had a good offseason. The Thunder just came off a championship and they're running it back. The Rockets got better with Kevin Durant. The Clippers, well, maybe you feel differently about them now that they brought in Brad Beal today. So it doesn't seem like the Grizzlies are going to compete for anything drastic, right? A Western Conference Finals, a Finals appearance, that type of thing. So what is next year about for this Memphis Grizzlies team?
I think they're going to be a team that is competitive, I think it's really the best thing I foresee for them right now. I think they're competitive. I think they can be a playoff team. But I would not be surprised if, you know, they're in the play-in and maybe potentially get swept, or not swept, but get beat in the first round again. That just kind of feels like where it's at. The West is, you know, we talk about conferences or teams being top-heavy, and it seems like the West really in that 1-8, maybe 1-9, kind of stand in the standings is going to be tough. It's going to be teams that are going to be pretty freaking good. And you just, you're trying to keep pace. And I think when we talked with Zach Kleiman, he made it pretty clear. He's like, we're not one player away.
Right.
We're not one, you know, good wing away from being a championship level roster, championship level team. And so I think you try to get a feel for, you know, what you can be this year. You be competitive on the floor. At the end of the day, you still have, you know, maybe a top 10 to top 15 player in Ja Morant, and that's maybe being on the more cautious side of things. Jaren Jackson Jr., if he can come back from injury and kind of hit the ground running in the way that he did for much of last season, you still got two, you know, all-star level players on your roster. You got a Zach Edey when he comes back, who proved that he could be in the Rookie of the Year conversation this year, going to be a great defender. So, I mean, I think there's the pieces are there. It's just about how quickly can you get them to roll together and to be, you know, connected quickly. And can they be, you know, connected in such a way that makes you, you know, scary to some other teams in the Western Conference? And again, I mean, you laid it all out just in terms of the teams that feel like they've gotten significantly better in the West this year. I mean, it just kind of feels like the Grizzlies haven't quite taken the same drastic step forward that some of these other teams have made in terms of roster construction. I mean, you never know how things are going to shake out once the games start getting played, the ball gets rolled out. But right now, it looks like the Grizzlies may just be a kind of a, you know, middle tier kind of team.
All right, now let me give you my take on that exact question, and I want your opinion on it. I think going into next year, set an over under for Ja Morant of how many games you want him to play. If he hits the over, you feel good about it. If he hits the under, you feel bad about it. Because in the end of the day, Avery, the truth that we have to speak into reality and continue to remind folks of is if Ja Morant is not on the floor for 65-plus games per year going forward, this team's never going to reach that pinnacle, that peak that you expected a couple of years ago. I think that's the truth we have to continue to speak out loud.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Ja's got to be on the floor. And if he's not on the floor, the Grizzlies are a significantly worse team. And maybe that wasn't the case 2 or 3 years ago when they, you know, they still had a pretty good record when he wasn't on the floor. But for the most part, I mean, he's your all-star. He's your superstar. He's your face of the franchise. And, you know, Jaren's coming along in a lot of those aspects. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, when Ja Morant is cooking, it's going to be tough to beat the Grizzlies. It's just the truth. So you want him healthy. You want him feeling good about himself and his play. You want him to feel good about the teammates that he's got around him. And at the end of the day, if he's playing well, I mean, there's no telling what the Grizzlies can be.
Yeah, for sure. All right, now, final thing I want to bring up with you. You're an Atlanta guy, right? So what'd you think about the All-Star game and All-Star festivities that wrapped up last night with the MLB All-Star game in Atlanta?
Okay, first, we got to shout out Brent Rooker, right?
Yes, I mean, of course.
Shout out to the ECF drag, comes in there, hits a home run that kind of closed the gap for the AL, right, then hits two.
And then gave them the lead with the first round of the home run derby to end the thing, the swing off.
I mean, I think that's the biggest thing that stands out to me in terms of like, oh, you know, what hashtag work tweet, right? It's something related to Memphis. I thought the All-Star festivities were really cool this year. I kind of wish, and, you know, Jason and John were kind of talking about this earlier, and I know this is a usual thing, but you kind of wish some of the bigger stars play a little bit longer in the game, right? And obviously, like, it is an All-Star game. You've got a lot of guys that they're rotating in for some of that stuff, but especially once the game kind of gets tied, you know, late stages, you're like, ah, man, I'd love for, you know, Aaron Judge to walk up here towards the end and end this thing, you know, that kind of deal. But as far as like the festivities themselves, I thought they were great. I thought the tribute to Hank Aaron.
That was phenomenal. That was great.
It was just super cool for them to do it, you know, lighting up the field and, you know, everything. They turn off all the lights and it's like a light show. I thought that was really, really cool and a fantastic tribute to a guy who means a ton, not just to the franchise, but to, you know, Major League Baseball and the home run record and everything like that. I mean, shout out to my city, man. I love Atlanta and I love Memphis, but it was cool to see my city in Atlanta kind of hold it down.
Yeah, to your point about wishing guys would stay around a bit longer, I don't know where Shohei Ohtani was or Aaron Judge was. Maybe they were on a private flight back to their home base city. But seeing like Jonathan Aranda from the Rays as, you know, the only player left in uniform to do the swing off when he only has 11 bombs during the year, that left a lot to be desired. It felt like there was other options out there that you could take advantage of. I feel like we were robbed to a certain extent. But I will say this. I am very close to giving a bunch of credit to Major League Baseball and to Rob Manfred. But at the same time, the thing that holds me back is ultimately I liked the extra inning home run derby, the swing off when it was tied 6-6 at the end. But it kind of is easy for Major League Baseball. Just lean back into launching the ball into orbit. It feels like that's like always the answer. I want to give them credit, but it feels like that's an easy fix for them, as opposed to looking at other all-star games that we watch on a yearly basis.
That's the best part of your sport. That's what people want to see. And at the end of the day, you give the audience what they want. Give the viewers what they want. You know, the customer is always right kind of thing. And we want to see bonk. Give us bonk.
Sure, of course. And it's funny because you see like people going after the NBA all-star game and saying, well, Rob Manfred figured this out. Major League Baseball figured this out. I don't think that the NBA has the same easy answers that Major League Baseball does.
I mean, what are you going to do, a slam dunk contest to decide, you know, who wins the game at the end of a tie game? Or, you know,
and can we be honest about the slam dunk contest?
Three-point contest winner, you know, if they're on the All-Star team and they win, it's a tie game. Like, the winner goes to the All-Star, to the three-point shooter winner. I don't know the answer. Right. At the end of the day, the basketball is facing the same problem that the MLB is. It's like you got to get your stars to be stars.
Sure.
In the All-Star game.
And to care.
They got to care. And that's some of that. No matter how much money or competitive edge you seem to throw at these guys, this doesn't kind of seem to be in their purview right now.
And you can't even say, like, the slam dunk thing, slam dunk contest to, you know, if it goes to overtime and you have some extra time to, you know, put that together. People don't enjoy slam dunks like they once did. And I think part of that is, one, I don't know if the guys want to be as explosive or, you know, put themselves in the line of fire. It's a lot of, I guess there's some injury concerns with that when you're contorting your body in the air. But also, we've run out of ideas when it comes to slam dunks. No one really discusses that, but we've sort of run out of ideas. We've seen just about everything we could have seen when it comes to dunks at the rim.
No, the human body can only do so much, game. But what I will say with that is, like, I be seeing some stuff on Instagram that just blow your mind. So the creativity's out there somewhere. It's just, you know, not amongst the NBA
players. Well, I was going to say it's got to be NBA players. It can't be Jordan Kilgannon. You know what I mean? It can't be Jordan Kilgannon, the guy who just does all the dunks, or, you know, who's the guy that – Mac McClung. Yeah. I think we've all, you know, we're over that gimmick at this point.
I would agree.
Yeah, so I did see people going after the NBA for their All-Star weekend, and it's like I don't know if you can compare Major League Baseball and the NBA when it comes to All-Star weekend. Just tough.
Different set of physical skills, different set of things that have to be accomplished.
And I don't think the NBA has any easy answers to improve their weekend. I just don't think they do.
There really aren't. I mean, unless you start bringing up new activities and new skills, and I think, you know, maybe you have a departure from the traditional three-point contest, slam dunk contest, skills challenge, all-star game. Like, bring in some new heat. I mean, make some things marketable.
Well, put some stakes on it.
And Sabrina Ionescu, I thought that was fantastic.
Sure, but you'd have to put some stakes on the All-Star game itself to make it look anything like it used to.
Yeah,
I'm not into putting too much stakes. Like, you know, Major League Baseball used to do home field advantage. They got rid of that because it was too much. Because you're trying to get all these players involved and get them some playing time, since you may have some first-time All-Stars that want to get on the field, get some at-bats. It just feels like that's a little bit too much of a stake for a game like that, for an exhibition game.
I was surprised at the number of rookies that played in the MLB All-Star game. I thought that was kind of cool that, you know, you're in your first year and you're getting the rookie All-Star. And I thought that was a pretty cool aspect of the game. I remember the one with the Athletics, Burn Rooker's teammate, I forget his first name, but last name was Wilson. And they're like doing an on the field interview with Wilson at, I think, shortstop, and then his dad in the crowd. You know,
right.
I thought that was kind of a cool aspect of it. I mean, maybe if the NBA can employ some of those aspects, it's kind of hard to do when you're running up
yes.
and down court. But
you're going to hear some heavy breathing the whole time. I don't know if anybody wants to hear that.
The guys on the bench in game interviews would be kind of cool.
Yep. For sure. All right, now go ahead and tease what we're going to be talking about on the 24th floor tomorrow. Before I,
oh yeah,
before
we,
I join.
We for sure got to get into these violations, right?
Okay.
With NCAA. So me and you will get into some of that. I think I'm going to talk to Ryan Mitchell, the Houston high school kid who got drafted to the Cardinals in round two.
Yep.
We'll have that on the show tomorrow, and we'll talk a little bit about these Grizzlies and again what these rookies and the summer league team is looking like, because they do play Thursday night as well.
Yep. Tune in to ABC 24 for Avery's sportscast, and also 24 Floor tomorrow. It'll be Avery and me. But Avery, I appreciate it, man. Great stuff as always.
Appreciate you, Gabe. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. He is Avery Braxton, award-winning sports anchor at ABC 24 Memphis. Make sure you go check out the 24 Floor for ABC 24 as well. I'll be on there tomorrow. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we're going to hop into the Blitz right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
The Broncos in their first round pick, Texas cornerback Jahdae Barron, have agreed to a rookie deal. He was one of two 2025 first rounders yet to reach a deal. Now, there's one, Shamar Stewart.
Of the Bengals, number 17th overall pick out of Texas A&M. Only, what, 5.5 sacks his entire time at Texas A&M? We know this conversation. First of all, good on the Broncos to get that deal done, I guess. We'll pat it on the back. It took so long, they were trying to figure out how much he was going to get in his initial signing bonus, even though the guarantee structure is still fully guaranteed. It is what it is. Took too long, but here we are. And pairing him as the corner on the other side of Pat Surtain, I think that there is some real possibilities that this Broncos secondary becomes one of the best in the National Football League. I'm a real big fan of Jahdae Barron. Now, to the Shamar Stewart news. I don't know if people have been paying attention to what's going on with him, but he is not even close to Cincinnati right now. He is actually in College Station. He's at A&M. He's working out alongside the team at this moment. I want to be very, very clear about this to clear up some of the confusion I've seen online. He cannot play for Texas A&M next year. He cannot play for Texas A&M. He forfeited the rest of his eligibility. He got drafted. Obviously, he hasn't signed a contract yet. I bet there's some, backdoor way through lawsuits he could ultimately play at A&M again. But get that out of your brain. He will not play at Texas A&M or at the college level ever again. What this would have to look like is him rolling over his eligibility for next year's draft and getting drafted. Now, I think he would. He's got a lot of, natural physical attributes that a lot of people like in an edge defender in the National Football League. But for the Bengals, this is just it's so insane how ridiculous this has become. Just they add error on top of error. They won't sign back Trey Hendrickson. They won't give him the deal that he ultimately has earned when he's had 35 sacks.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The last 2 years, and he was the sack leader. He was fourth in Defensive Player of the Year voting last year.
Pretty good.
Really good. Fantastic. I know he's 30. But at the same time, you give him his deal because if you don't have him, you're not going to have a pass rush. But they don't sign him back. They bring in Shamar Stewart to potentially add a little bit of pressure onto the shoulders of Trey Hendrickson to make him want to play one more year, to play alongside Shamar Stewart. And they don't even bring in Shamar Stewart. They haven't signed him to a contract. And I'm tired of Bengals fans and Bengals media. I see this every day now since the Shamar Stewart saga has begun. It's, oh, I'm tired of this guy. Just let him walk. Screw it. The Bengals are doing him wrong.
He's not asking for anything that all of their first-round picks, you know, I mean, they have gotten fully guaranteed money when they needed it, a normal first-round salary, rookie deal. They're asking him to forfeit some guarantees that he does not want to forfeit. And I don't blame him in the slightest for that. I get where the Bengals are coming from to a certain extent because he's developmental, hasn't really showed anything. But at the same time, just give him the deal that you give every other first rounder that you've brought in the past decade. It doesn't seem that complicated. But here we are. I am getting to the point. Like in the middle of this saga, when we're not approaching training camp as fast as we are, I'm saying, okay, the Bengals are going to get this done, right? Like, they'll figure it out eventually. Either Shamar Stewart bends the knee or the Bengals decide, okay, we're just going to give him the normal deal that we give to all our first-round picks. But as we've gotten closer to training camp, I think it's becoming pretty likely at this point we'll see Shamar Stewart as a 2026 NFL draft prospect, and he may go through the draft process again. Just nasty work all around and unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this before.
What happens to Trey Hendrickson's leverage if Shamar Stewart ends up foregoing the season?
Here's my thing. I don't think
he needs any more.
I don't think Shamar Stewart, like the Bengals, if they really thought that Shamar Stewart was going to take away leverage from Trey Hendrickson, I thought they were always sorely mistaken. So I think Trey Hendrickson has just as much leverage as he always had. It's just in the eye of the Bengals, right? They may have thought bringing in Shamar Stewart as their future edge rusher and a guy who's going to get a bunch of sacks, maybe they thought that it would take away some leverage from him, but that's not the reality of the situation. Trey Hendrickson is a proven player, and Shamar Stewart is anything but a proven player. He didn't even really prove it at Texas A&M. I thought he was better than what his stats showed, but his stats didn't show us anything. He had 5.5 sacks his entire career at A&M. And here's Trey Hendrickson in the NFL getting 17.5 sacks back-to-back years. So I think if I know what the Bengals were trying to do, I think they were mistaken in thinking that this would somehow take away leverage from Trey Hendrickson. But we're at a very big inflection point, and I am curious how this ultimately ends up. Are the Bengals finally going to bend the knee, bring in Shamar Stewart before training camp, or is Shamar Stewart just going to run it back in the 2026 NFL draft? I think that is more likely than it ever has been in NFL history with any prospect ever.
Every day that goes by, it seems like a miracle that the Bengals made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
A true miracle, just despite everything.
That's Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and Lou Anarumo, who was their DC, who's now with the Colts. That's what that was. That was good on the field play. That was good production from the stars you had on the team. But I think we're learning, even with how well they played in those back-to-back AFC championships, getting to a Super Bowl against the Rams, they ultimately lost it. We're still seeing that at that point, the Bengals front office and the Bengals higher-ups were acting very unseriously.
ESPN surveyed NFL executives, coaches, and scouts as part of their yearly positional rankings, and they did their top 10 NFL QBs earlier in the week, and here's how it turned out. 1, Patrick Mahomes. 2, Josh Allen. 3, Joe Burrow. 4, Lamar Jackson. 5, Jaden Daniels. 6, Matt Stafford. 7, Justin Herbert. 8, Goff. 9, Hurts. 10, Mayfield. With 2 honorable mentions, Stroud and Love.
All right, 2 conversations I want to have off the top about the top 5. 1, I'm just going to ask you this question because this is generally this is how I feel. Has there ever been a bigger gap between the top 4 quarterbacks and the rest of the field? Like looking at Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jackson, then you get to 5. We've had this conversation on this show before.
Yeah.
You get to 5 and you're like, okay, eye of the beholder figured out. But those top 4, you have to have in some order, likely with Mahomes at 1, Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jackson. I feel like there has never been
a
gap and an unquestioned sort of hierarchy at the quarterback position in the NFL. These top 4 guys are the top 4 guys, and you cannot even shake it or rank it any other way.
I would agree with that.
Now, number 5. Let's get into that. Jaden Daniels at number 5 after 1 year. 1 year. Now, listen. I personally am okay with this. And the reason I say that, yes, he was a rookie. Yes, he's going to have to show us something in year two. We've seen guys go through sophomore slumps. C.J. Stroud's the most recent example of that last season with the Houston Texans, although his offense sort of devolved, and there's some reasons that that was the case. They were still a winning team, and he has turned around the fortunes for that franchise. Don't want to take anything away from C.J. Stroud. But Jaden Daniels, in his rookie year, threw for 4,000 yards, ran for nearly 1,000, and this was a guy who was the sixth player all time to lead his team at the quarterback position as a rookie to a conference championship game.
Right.
So, like, I have to give him some level of props. You can have some disagreement. Okay, Matt Stafford's won a Super Bowl. Should he be ranked ahead of him? And he's still playing really well, well into his 30s. He's in his mid-30s now. You could probably, you know, say Jalen Hurts, if you wanted to put him at 5. I'm not going to argue with you. I don't necessarily think his you know, level of play is on the same level as what we saw from Jaden Daniels, sort of the one-man show. Jalen Hurts has Dallas Goedert at tight end and two top 10 wide receivers on the outside, the best offensive line in football, really good running back, the best running back, the offensive player of the year last year in Saquon Barkley. So, like, you could dock him for that, but he is a Super Bowl winner. And we hold Super Bowl winners in high regard. Right?
Especially
that's,
in the NFL.
That's a great accolade to have next to your name. So if you wanted to put him at number 5, that's fine with me. But I'm okay with Jaden Daniels being at number 5, even though he's played 1 year. How do you feel about that?
I'm okay with it. I think I would have preferred it to be Stafford or Hurts. But part of these rankings, I also kind of view them as a projection of what the season is going to be. So they probably project that Jaden Daniels will be a top 5 quarterback this upcoming season. And that's why I'm okay with it. I think that the biggest thing is I think that Hurts is a little bit too low. I think Stafford should be 5 or 6. And then I think Hurts should have probably been 5 or 6.
Hurts should be somewhere between 5 and 7, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
He should be in the same group as Jaden Daniels, Matt Stafford, and him. Like, that should be the group.
I'm a big fan of Justin Herbert. I like him more than his doubters do. But having him at number 7 when he's won nothing feels...
He's done nothing in the playoffs, and he threw 4 picks last year.
It feels you can't have him at 7. You just can't.
Listen, you know I am a staunch Justin Herbert supporter.
Yes.
Even when he was at Oregon and all the pre-draft stuff, when Marcus Arroyo, who was a failed coach at UNLV and an awful offensive coordinator, was his offensive coordinator at Oregon. I always try to tell people, he was a bad offensive coordinator. So, like, what you did not see from Herbert is a function of him being the offensive coordinator.
Right.
Him not throwing the ball deep, all that. So I've always been a Herbert fan. But I agree with you. I have to. Like, the physical attributes, if I created a quarterback in a lab to sling the ball around the field, I would create Justin Herbert, 6'6", 230, decent legs, escapability, good accuracy, rocket for an arm. That's what I'd create. But again, that talent has to meet execution and productivity, and we have not seen that from Justin Herbert on a consistent basis, especially in the playoffs. Last year, again, 4 interceptions in that playoff game to get them knocked out. So I think Hurts is the one guy I'd look at on this list and say, far too low. He should definitely hop up over Jared Goff.
Yeah.
He should definitely hop up over Justin Herbert at the very, very least.
And then I think that you could make an argument that Mayfield should be a little bit higher too. What I found really interesting about this list is there is no mention of Dak Prescott whatsoever.
He was, I think he had like one vote. He was in others receiving votes. But I don't find that interesting because I figured he wouldn't be in this top 10 list.
I thought he would at least be in the honorable mentions.
If we're going to talk about Justin Herbert and his lack of playoff success.
Sure. Hey.
Then
sure.
Dak has had way more run and way more opportunity with better teams and a better organization. And he's only won, what, 2 playoff games his entire career? I don't think Dak should be in this. He should not be in a top 10 conversation.
I think now, he should have been in the honorable perspective, mentions, not the top 10.
And being an above average quarterback in a league where quarterback is king, like, I still give Dak Prescott his credit. He is a good NFL quarterback. And this year, if he produces now with George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb on the outside, maybe he could jump back into this top 10. But he's going to have to win a playoff game. He's going to have to show us something outside of regular season statistics, throwing for 4,000 or 5,000 yards. I need to see more from that from Dak Prescott. We are way too far into his career for me to continue to just give him props for having good regular seasons.
I want to test the fences here for a moment. 1 and 2.
Okay.
Mahomes, Allen. Are we getting close to a potential Allen could jump Mahomes for number one? Or is it until Patrick Mahomes doesn't make it to the Super Bowl, he's got to be at number one?
I'm so torn on this. Because Patrick Mahomes, three Super Bowls,
right.
Unreal, not close, right? Like when it comes to quarterbacks in the league who have accomplished the most, it's like you almost default him at one, just like Tom Brady when he was playing in the league.
Right.
But recent history, I personally don't think there's an argument that Josh Allen should be number one in the league. MVP of the league last year with no wide receiver help. Let's be clear on that. No wide receiver help. Like, name his wide receiver core right now.
Couldn't do it.
Exactly. So, I have to, and he runs the ball at a high level. There's that. I would personally, this is maybe a hot take, I'd personally put Josh Allen at number one. And some people would say, well, he's lost to the Chiefs every year in the playoffs, and that's true. But he's lost to the Chiefs. The Bills have lost to the Chiefs, not Josh Allen losing to Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen and the Bills have lost to the Chiefs. Because here's the thing about Josh Allen that I don't think people are privy to. Go take a gander at his playoff numbers. He's played 13 games in the playoffs. He's unbelievable. This is what his 17-game season in the playoffs would look like against the best teams in the AFC. If you extrapolate his numbers, his hypothetical numbers, he's played 13 games, let's round it up to 17, keep him on the same pace. This is what his numbers would be. 4,400 passing yards, 33 passing touchdowns, 5 INTs, 875 rushing yards, 9 rushing touchdowns. We can dock Josh Allen for not having beaten the Chiefs to a certain extent. But at the same time, we have to acknowledge this is also a very much a team game. There is 11 starters on offense, 11 starters on defense, 11 starters on special teams. The Bills have come up short against the Chiefs. Josh Allen pulls his weight and does all he can, but his team has not been able to get over top and get to a Super Bowl. I would personally put Josh Allen one, but I fully, without question, understand why Patrick Mahomes is number one in all these lists. On that note, I need to tell you about Old Dominic Distillery. Get down there, first of all, right there on the riverfront, 305 South Front Street is where you can.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched, no life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Find Old Dominic Distillery and their state-of-the-art distillery. Book a tour and tasting at olddominic.com. You can just show up if you're out on the town and stop at the bar and get a craft cocktail made by my good friends at Old Dominic. But I need to point you in the direction of a new release. They have launched a premium vodka using pristine Memphis aquifer water, charcoal filtration, and a multi-step distillation process. Old Dominic Vodka delivers what the distillery calls an even cleaner, crisper version of the profile vodka drinkers desire. So as we head toward the weekend, make sure you stop at your local liquor store and get a bottle of that premium vodka. But they have vodka, they have toddy, they have whiskey, they have bourbon, award-winning selections of all of those great spirits. So make sure you get a bottle of Old Dominic today. And again, stop by 305 South Front Street. They have music coming up this weekend, music coming up next weekend, and they have a bunch of events that you can check out at olddominic.com that will happen throughout the summer. Old Dominic Distillery wants me to tell you to come by and say hi. Now, we need to go ahead and wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show. We'll do that next with the Rewind right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.